We are now recording, and I don't see Dr. Picard yet, so welcome. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Daryl, and then we can have Chuck do the same, and we can get started.
Okay. My name is Daryl Scabina. I do cybersecurity certification accreditation for KBR. A little bit of history on myself. I joined the Marine Corps in 1993 as a high school graduate. Went to the Marine Corps actually initially as a guaranteed infantry, and ended up stress fracturing both my feet in boot camp. That put me into the open contract category, which basically meant that I was going to do anything that the Marine Corps decided that I needed to do for them at that time, which meant that I spent the next couple months scared to death that I'd be a cook or a motor T guy. At some point, they told me I'd be a computer programmer. To be honest with you, I'd never touched a computer before in my entire life. So that was almost as scary as being a cook, although not quite. I was a terrible computer programmer. Spent a few years in the fleet, Marine Corps, doing local area networking, working in banyan vines, PC repair, that type of thing. Spent a few years guarding embassies overseas in a few different places. Came back and made a lateral move into a new job specialty in 2000. I actually was notified just a few minutes before the first plane hit the tower in New York that I was accepted into the Information Assurance MOS, which the Marine Corps stood up in 2001. Went out to the schoolhouse in 29 Palms and stood up the first military occupational course for the DOD for information assurance cybersecurity. Now, we developed that course, taught that course, and thankfully it's come a long way from when we did it. We were teaching Windows 2000 security at the time, along with some of the other stuff. Now it's a much, much farther along, a much better course. Since then, I retired from the Marine Corps in 2013 as a Chief Warrant Officer 3. I worked for Honeywell for a brief period of time, and then came out to Fallon, Nevada, where I was the IT manager for the electronic warfare range, where they all the combat air wings come through prior to deploying, as well as Top Gun, and then the search and rescue training takes place. Recently, spring of 2019, I decided to make a different choice, moved over to KBR, and since then, I've been working with Chuck and his team to help the Air Force medical treatment facilities certify and accredit their systems so they can operate within an acceptable level of risk on the Department of Defense networks.
Awesome. All right. We're just going to get questions, Dr. Picard, and Daryl was going to introduce, or I'm sorry, Chuck was going to introduce himself next, unless you wanted to jump in.
Well, thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Tina, and thank you, Daryl, for joining this event. I thought this would be really interesting to have, you know, especially on Marines Day today, Marines Anniversary, a Marine, a former Marine talked to you guys about his experience since he moved from, you know, being a Marine to being a cybersecurity manager. And again, thank you for accepting this invite, Daryl. Chuck, would you like to introduce yourself and give your thoughts on, you know, I mean, how did you get to this position?
Sure. My name is Chuck Kelleher. I am also retired SIP. I retired from the Veterans Service. I retired from the Army. Sorry, I couldn't help, Daryl. I joined the Army straight out of high school in 87 because I'm not really sure I was headed towards college at that particular time. So I wanted to get a job in the Army that I could at least get a job when I got in the Army after 3 years. Well, I stayed in the Army 22 years, so that didn't work. I was a communications technician, long-haul communications, digital multiplexers, radios, that sort of thing. And a couple of my assignments included, I was an instructor twice at the Army Signal School at Fort Gordon. I was also an instructor at a NATO Signal School in the Netherlands, which was really nice duty. How did I end up in IA? The story I always tell how I ended up in the IA field is, my last assignment in the Army was I was stationed at Disipak in Hawaii. And our job was to manage overall management of all the comms in the Pacific Theater. And we had to brief the PACOM J6, this little short general. I won't say his name since I just called him short. But anyway, so when I first got there, we briefed him every morning at the stand-up, and it was 90-95% technical outages, links, networks, that sort of thing. And if there was any IA-related stuff, we would go ahead and work it into the briefing. By the time I left in 2009, 4 years later, it was a complete reversal. 90-95% of the stuff that we briefed was all IA, all information security related. The only time we briefed network outages, if anything was larger than an OC3, which is a 155 meg pipe, and if it wasn't redundant, otherwise we didn't even mention it. As I said, that was my last assignment, and I could see where the writing on the wall was, and I was on that slow process to get my degree, so I was finishing my bachelor's right when I got out, and decided that that was the field I wanted to go into. So for my bachelor's, I selected computer studies from University of Maryland, sorry, Purdue, because I could concentrate on information security. I could choose the classes that I thought would be beneficial, because my goal at that time when I retired was to get the CISSP, because that was definitely the certification to have, and sort of still is now. I retired, and I had to get a job. So just so happens the company that I got hired with at Fort Gordon to be an instructor again, their primary core competency was information assurance. So after my 1 year contract ended for training or instructing, I was able to transition over into the IA field. Some of it's just pure luck, because I didn't check, honestly, before I got hired by that company, you know, could I get in the IA field to that company? I just wanted a job so I could buy a house and get my family settled. But it all worked out, because that contract went away. I was able to transition into the IA field, which I've now been doing for 9.5 years. I was able to finish my bachelor's. The company I worked for was really supportive, and they sent me to a CISSP boot camp. I was able to achieve that. And then since I was used to University of Maryland, their courses, I went ahead and signed up. They had a 2-year master's degree program in cybersecurity. So I completed that. And now I'm working with Daryl and a bunch of other highly professional, really smart individuals, maintaining the security for the online medical systems for the military. And as both Daryl and I are retired, we have a personal stake in how secure that information is, or the network is, because our information, medical information, my family's medical information is processed on those networks. So it's very important to me.
You know,
Chuck, if I may say something, let me tell you a little story. I used to work for a state government entity in the Midwest, let's say. And this entity owned information about 500,000 professors throughout the state. And one day, one of my colleagues, who happened to be Indian, went back home to India. And he was surprised to hear one of his friends say, "Oh, I'm so glad that you're okay, because I saw that you were treated for disease, whatever it is, with this medicine, and this medicine doesn't work, and they should have given you this medicine," and so forth. So bottom line is, yes, I mean, all the our information potentially goes overseas to countries like India. That's the experience at least I've seen. And potentially people have access to very sensitive information about health, medicines, income, and things like that. So just know it can happen, actually.
You know, it's interesting, Dr. Picard, that you picked Chuck and myself, because outside of our military background, you really couldn't have picked two different people. Chuck's got, you said you have a master's, right, Chuck?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, you have a master's. I have a high school diploma from Hugo, Oklahoma, and an associate's degree. Now, the two things that have made me successful is, of course, I have 20 years of experience in the Marine Corps, and I have a CISSP. Those two things have got me in the door, period. Flat out, I can't say anything more for it. My military experience and that CISSP, hands down, will get you an interview. Now, you've got the interview. You've got to sell yourself, absolutely. But that CISSP will get you in the door.
Especially in the military. If you are... All of you who are currently in the military, just know that if you have a clearance, you have a leg up. And if you pass Security Plus, you are hireable virtually on the spot. If you pass the SSP, it will make you a lot more desirable, and of course your income is going to go up very significantly. There's a huge difference in salary. Was it LS last week that mentioned that, you know, there are those that are CSSP, and unfortunately, I mean, you know, I know it sounds a little maybe rude, and I apologize if it is. I mean, it's not meant to be, but there are CSSPs and then there's everybody else. And it's not fair, it's not right, because CISM is not easy. It is easier, but it's not easy. But unfortunately, there is this difference, CSSP and everybody else.
CISSP is definitely the gold standard out there. I mean, there are some others that tend to come close to it. GSEC is another organization that has some good certifications. There's some CISM, there's some flavors in the ISC squared world that tend to come close to the CISSP. But flat out, when 8570 first came out, and I want to say in 2004, 2005, when they first came out with it, and I don't even think it was called 8570 at the time, it was a previous iteration. What I did, because I'm lazy, I said, hey, what is the top tier that I need to be successful? Because what I didn't want to do is I didn't want to do the stepping stone of what's this certification and what's the next one that I need to chase. I said, what is the top one? They said, CISSP. I said, that's the one I want because I want to get it done. I don't want to have to worry about it anymore. And I went for that. So for the students that are attending this class, you are absolutely doing what you need to do to put yourself in position to, A, you've got a degree. You're working towards your CISSP, and that will set you up for success, period.
And again, as I've mentioned in my class, pretty much every single first class I have, I mentioned this. A CISSP is, according to the U.S. Navy, is typically equivalent to a master's level program. Okay, either you get a master's level or you get a CISSP. So doing CISSP pretty much saves you a significant amount of time in studying.
So now you tell me. Why did you tell me that a couple of years ago?
The DoD instruction 8570 actually allows for some educational degrees, depending on where they're focused on, to qualify for the certifications. But it's, you either have a CISSP to attain an Information Assurance Manager Level 3, CISSP, or there's a couple others, or you have a bachelor's or master's level. So that's the way they look at it when it comes to hiring either in the GS workforce or some of the others.
Yeah, one thing I'd like to add as far as, well, this is the flavor of what the students want to talk about tonight, is for those of us that pursue a job in and around the DoD, yeah, I went ahead and got my master's because that certainly helps in the 501 GS because you qualify for higher level jobs once you achieve that. But most job descriptions are written based on certifications. Yeah, you have a degree, but when I was the program manager of the position on Fort Gordon and we were hiring, each duty description, it was a written job description, and I think they overdo it because just because you have a particular certification doesn't mean you're an expert, but it's written just based off certifications. And some places will not let them hire somebody that they already know, you know, is a much smarter individual, has a lot more experience in a particular area. But if they don't have that particular certification, whatever field you're going down, that's just the way the DoD operates right now.
And let me mention to this extent something, my personal experience. I was asked to apply by someone in Okinawa for a position, a government position. And I was, in essence, pre-selected. And I applied, and I had at that time CISSP, but the mandatory requirement was to have at least Security Plus. And unfortunately, what happened is that I didn't have Security Plus at that time, and the computer didn't select me because I didn't have Security Plus. So just be aware, I know it's very silly, but it could make sense for you guys to do Security Plus first to just make sure that you're ready for the exam. It's a more expensive solution. Tina, do we still have vouchers for students to do Security Plus?
No, but they do get 50% off as academic students. So, and I just saw the price list is less than $200 for Security Plus now.
So I would strongly suggest to anyone listening who is considering to take CISSP, CISSP is what, $699 or $799? I don't remember
yeah,
which
sounds
one.
Sounds about right. Yeah, it's went up since I took it, but it sounds about right.
Before you go, if you are doubting about yourself, potentially go and take Security Plus and see how well you do. If you score very high in Security Plus, you know you're probably going to be good. You have a tangible exam. Security Plus is easier, it's shorter, but it will potentially give you a cheap guidance. If you can get it for $100, it will give you confidence. If you fail Security Plus, then you know that you may not be ready.
Okay? Yeah, and Security Plus is, at least when I took it years ago, is basically straight memorization. You go all the different subject areas, and they have practice questions. If you can memorize those, I mean, those are the ones you see in your test.
So the exam has changed, Chuck. There is
I took it 8-9 years ago, so it could have changed.
It changed recently. I mean, I took it 10 years ago, but very recently it changed, and there is now some practical questions where you're supposed to firewall rules or things like that.
Right.
So there is, it's changed slightly. It's not very, very difficult. For all of you that are listening, FYI, I did a boot camp Sunday. Dr. Burton was kind enough to wake up at 7 a.m. to record the event because for some reason I could not schedule it in advance. But you are all welcome to listen to the recording. It's a 3.5-hour event that I did Sunday morning. So please feel free to email me if you don't have the link, and I'll give it to you. Okay? Chuck and Daryl, thank you for introducing yourselves. So can you talk to the students pretty much about what you enjoy about cybersecurity and why is it a career and why people should go into a government job as opposed to civilian?
Go ahead, Chuck.
Okay, I'll get to the part of why do I enjoy my job. I mean, I spent most of the last 9 years I've been working on IBMV teams doing the assessments. And I've been asked a couple times, if you've been doing that for that long, aren't you bored doing the same thing every time? And the answer is no, because every site we go to is different. They're different flavors, different equipment, heavily influenced by whoever is leading that site. So it's not the same thing time in, time out. So to me, I find it interesting, and it can be challenging, because if you go to a site and they're using, I don't know, a newer version of a database or operating system that updated or something, it's a challenge, because, and I always try to review ahead of time and to make sure that I'm thoroughly prepared before I arrive on site. So to me, it can be a challenging and rewarding career.
Sorry, can you explain IVNV? You mentioned IVNV. Students may not understand what IVNV is.
Yeah, I wanted to. IVNV is the independent verification and validation. When we go out to assess a system that's headed towards an ATO, the authority to operate, we're going to do the IVNV is the technical and administration review while we are on site to determine whether the system is meeting just the STIG standards, or it's configured, or if they're not set up exactly as just the STIG specifies, then they should be able to explain why they're not set up that way. Why there's justified reason why they've changed the configuration based on their business or system or user requirements.
So, Chuck, can you explain to the students why are we doing this?
Why are we doing the ATO process?
Yes, students may not understand this.
Okay, we'll step back. Any system that connects to the DOT military has to be verified, well, the safe and secure system, which means they have to be validated that they have not only the technical standards implemented, but also the documentation process and procedures in place to protect that data. The reason we go in, it's required every 3 years, is you need an independent validator, which is what the side that we're on right now. In other words, having somebody else evaluate their own system leaves room for, we'll just say, generous answers. When we come in, they not only have to demonstrate the technical portion, and as I said, the documentation portion. So they say, well, we have a password policy that minimum 15 characters, and they have to update their password every 60 days. I'm like, well, that's fine. Now show me. What, you want to see it? Yeah, it has to be documented. And the reason all that stuff is documented is often you go on a site and you're going to find there's one or two people that are the key people, the button people. Every time you have a question, they'll say, talk to Bob, talk to Bill, talk to Bob, talk to Bill. That's not a good thing, especially if the if everything is not documented. That means it's not repeatable. That means if somebody else goes to work at that location or fills that position, if they don't have the same level of knowledge as the person that they replaced, then the system is no longer secure as it was before. So by documenting all the policies and procedures, documenting why they've configured the system the way they have, then it's long-term sustainable. And as I said, you're protecting people's personal medical information and personal health information. So to me, that's important. Does that help?
Daryl, would you like to comment on what Chuck mentioned?
Sure, of course. First and foremost, to be honest with you, there's a technical aspect, which is interesting. But for me, it's more about people. I've worked at places that have technology that is gloriously outdated. I've just read an article, for example, that the Oregon State election system is ran on Windows 2008 server. And that is what it is. I've worked at places that was still running Windows 2003. It is what it is, but the people, I enjoy working with people because you can have old outdated technology, but if you have good people who care about what it is they do, they'll make it work. If you have people who don't care about what it is they do, then you can have the newest technology and it's just not going to work. It's not going to be secure. It's not going to be implemented properly, and it's not going to be taken care of well. So for me, I enjoy the people aspect of it, which seems kind of weird because you'd think it'd be a technology thing for me. And technology's fun. Don't get me wrong. There's all kinds of cool stuff. I'd dig into Wireshark dumps. That's fun. Looking at firewalls. That's cool. But people, to me, that's why I was so excited about last week's discussion with the social engineering black badge winner. That's cool stuff. Because that's where you're going to win your money. I don't care what you do with technology. People will always be your weakest link, period.
Cool. And what about, do you guys feel a sense of, working like that, you are protecting pretty much the network, right? This is what Chuck said. Does it give you a sense of duty, maybe, or something like that?
Well, I'd say you get a sense of accomplishment when I leave a site, because so often you'll show up for a site visit and they're going to tell you from the beginning that, look, we can read a stick as well as you can, so you're wasting your time evaluating us. We already know everything that we need to know. By the time we leave after 2 weeks, and it's not because I'm trying to find something to prove them wrong, just through the normal process of going through all of the documentation, all the systems where they're configured, we are going to find stuff. We're going to find stuff either like, oh, yeah, I set that up, but I haven't written that. I didn't document that yet. Or I was hoping you wouldn't catch that because we need that to accomplish this task. Well, that's fine if they need it for a task, but by getting it documented, so as I said, it's sustainable, it's repeatable, and the biggest thing is the CYA. I don't say that out loud. I don't type of class this is. But so if something does go wrong, if something does happen, the site can honestly state, we had the policies and procedures in place. We did this, this, and this. So, it's just the blame. In a good way. In other words, somebody that hung out to dry because they didn't do what they were supposed to do. It's documented. The only fully secure system is one that's not connected to anything.
Well, and even those, to some extent, aren't fully secure. And to provide a good example of that, I worked on a system in Okinawa, which was the alert system for the tsunamis. If they had a tsunami, there was an alert system. That thing was fully disconnected. However, it was rampant with viruses because what the technicians would do is they would update it using this USB drive. Well, that USB drive was the same drive that they would, take home and bring their movies and all that kind of stuff on. And because they were connecting it to the tsunami system. The tsunami system didn't work. It wouldn't put out an alert fast enough to be effective. So even a fully disconnected system like that sometimes can be at risk. To answer your question, Dr. Picard, there's probably some of that. I mean, if I was working for, I don't know, Ace Hardware or something, I don't know that I'd get the same level of satisfaction. I mean, that's about money. And you know, this job is about people's medical records. And the previous job was about the protection of data and ensuring the availability of the network. So that way the pilots, the last job was, this job is, I can see the results from the packages when they're approved. My last job, I could see the results because when the work was done, I heard the plane take off. I saw the bombs dropped and I heard the plane land. You know, the job before that was about classified data. So yeah, there's absolutely. And if I was working for Starbucks, I'm sure I probably wouldn't have the same level of satisfaction.
But you'd have free coffee.
But I would have free coffee, and that I'd probably be a lot skinnier.
So the message here for all of you students who are current military, former military, there is a pass. As you can see, these two gentlemen have done it. One in the Marines and one in the Army have succeeded after 20 years of serving our country into transitioning, one without degree pretty much, and one with plenty of degrees and certification, to transition into being very successful in cybersecurity. Okay? So the message here is that they are careers. Now, let's not be too specific, but can you confirm, based on your experience, not talking about yourselves, that money is there? Because students, we all want to say that we are learning because, you know, it's good and it's exciting and stuff. But at the end of the day, we all want to know that there is money here. Can you both say that, you know, yes, if you pass CSSP, you are likely fairly quickly to be, start between 80 and 100, depending on your past. If you have CSSP and over, you're probably going to be north of that. Now, if you only have Security Plus, you're probably going to struggle with just 60-ish to maybe 110 at best. This is my opinion. Could you gentlemen discuss this?
I mean, from the salary standpoint, I mean, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I went after the CSSP because I could see that that's just the way the world was going, and that was where the technology was transitioning. I mean, everything's going to be security related, and CSSP was the one to have. It's also an actor because if you read all of the – every year they put up the five top-paying certifications, and CSSP is either number one or number two normally. Program project management, and then CSSP or vice versa, depending on which list you look at. So absolutely. I mean, I have a wife and two kids, and one's in college, so I need the money to pay for that. So it's not altruistic that I'm doing this.
True. And I'll tell you, and I'm not in the role now, but in my previous role, I was definitely a hiring manager. And I will say, generally speaking, in the DOD, if you don't have a CISSP, if you have a Security Plus or something like that, you're probably going to stay below the six-figure mark. If you have a CSSP, you're going to bump yourself up above the six-figure mark. I'm a high school graduate with an associate's degree in general studies, and if it wasn't for my CSSP, I guarantee you I would not be making anywhere near what I'm making now. I'm making more money than I ever thought that I would ever make. I'll be flat-out honest with you. And Chuck's my boss, so thank you, Chuck.
You're welcome.
Thank you, gentlemen, for talking about this. So I just want to be clear for everybody listening. Very important that you keep hearing that there are jobs. No, so you've heard a lot of people from the commercial sector. Mm-hmm. Commercial sector, it's one thing. I understand that if you have the ability to get a clearance, which I think less than 30% of Americans have the ability to get a clearance, and you can get a Security Plus, it adds considerable value to you, okay? Just know that. As I've said before, no, you cannot apply for your own clearance. You are sponsored by a company. Does it happen? Yes. Certain companies will do that. It's not all the time. If you are former military or current military and you're transitioning out, it's a lot easier to get it done. Okay? Can you, gentlemen, just confirm to the students what I said is correct?
Yeah, when I retired out of just the pack, I had the TSSCI, which was great and really remarkable. If you have that level or security clearance when you get out of the service, find a job immediately that's going to support that. Because I didn't need mine, and after 2 years, it went away, and I seriously doubt I'll ever end up somewhere else where a company's going to spend the time and the money to put me back in with a TSSCI clearance. Not going to happen.
Yeah, because those clearances, I mean, an employer that sponsors you, for top secret, I think it costs about $30,000 to get a clearance for someone, because the government charges for the investigation pretty much that is done. So they look at the universities, the professors, to make sure that person went to school, the grades. They ask the neighbors and those kind of things. Okay, but bottom line is, let's make sure that everybody understands that there are jobs. And as you can see, those two gentlemen have been very successful in transitioning out from military to civilian world.
So just be willing to move. Just if you're willing to move, the chances of getting the job are astronomically higher. If you limit yourself to one location, that'll make it more challenging unless you have to be working in D.C. or someplace. If you're willing to move, you're going to get a job.
Yep. Now, I think there's discussions about, with COVID and the pandemic over the past year, that may create some flexibility in the job market for more
That's
remote
a good point.
Work. I'll be honest. I'm a bit cynical. I think up front that may create some flexibility, and I don't know long term if that's going to be sustainable. I don't know. I'm a bit cynical. I think in a couple of years we may go back to more of a traditional job market, but maybe it'll be there.
So it'll be interesting. Next week we are going to be very lucky. We're going to have Major General Lee from DSAD. Awesome. Going to be there. And one of the things I want to ask him about is SIPR at home. So there is a new product for classified networks that allows you to do classified work at home. And it's potentially a life changer because it could allow people to do classified work from their own home without having to go to a site, which means that, if you were working in Boston, where the cost of living is very high, you could move to Iowa Ohio or wherever, where the cost of living is a lot cheaper and, potentially live a lot better and still do your classified work remotely. So, just being aware next week should be a very interesting event. We're going to have three people from DISA. And we're going to talk about one of the things I'd like to talk is SIPR at home. And potentially there's even top secret at home, which to me is even more crazy because top secret at home seems to be a dream come true for the Russian and Chinese.
But that doesn't seem like a great idea. But
well, the trick there is really, you've got two problems to solve. You've got the data arrest issue, and then you've got the transport. Now, transport has been solved for a while now with NSA Suite B or some other hardware type stuff. The data arrest, you could potentially solve with some cloud technology that the DoD has been looking at for a while, but I hadn't heard that got into the TS realm. That's interesting.
I mean, all it would take is the perpetrator to, get into the house of someone that has TS.
Right.
Someone leaves a token and
device,
and then you've compromised the network.
Mm-hmm.
Or you plug in, you have access to device, you plug in a USB, and, game over. So it should be very interesting next week. I urge everybody to attend next week. I don't remember what time it is next week, but, it should be very, very interesting. Dr. Burton, do you remember what time it is next week?
General Yi is on next week at
2:30.
Yep.
Yeah, 2:30 Pacific time. So what's that, 5:30? You guys?
On Tuesday?
Yeah, Tuesday the 17th.
Yep, you'll see my smiling face.
Now, this plays. This is really the cornerstone for everything in the DoD. Like Chuck referenced STIGSER earlier, their Secure Technical Implementation Guidelines. They are the framework by which they describe how technologies should be configured.
You bring up
it provides to us.
Thank you, Daryl, for emphasizing on what Chuck mentioned earlier. This is something that all of you should look at. You can go to cyber.mil and download unclassified STIGs, okay? And you can download them, then unzip them and so forth. And then it will give you what you need to do on your own machine based on the technology that you have to make it safer.
Now, here's the cool thing I want to bring up. Last week, you asked us, Dr. Picard, you asked her, should students publish their own papers? Now, you can go to cyber.mil, and if they have DISA STIGs that they're looking at implementing, they do requests for comments, RFCs. And as students, you could submit comments to these STIGs and say, hey, I think that you should implement TLS in this way, or I think that you should implement Windows 2016 server in this way. And in that way, start developing a reputation about somebody who understands technology and cybersecurity before you ever even graduate.
Yeah, it's a very good point, Daryl. Thank you for making it. Remember, everybody, you get your job not when you finish your degree. You start looking for your job the day you start college, where you start building your network, you start building your reputation. So do take advantages of these opportunities to make comments. They're looking for comments about NIST publications. They're looking for comments about STIG. Do take advantage of these. Try STIGing your machine to see if you can do it. See what's the impact on your machines of implementing the STIGs. Now, know that if you implement all of the STIGs, your machine is not going to work, okay? Most likely, if you implement all STIGs, nothing's going to work, okay? Because you will lock down pretty much everything. You won't be able to use USBs. Nothing's going to work. So you're going to need to start unlocking things. And the game is to pretty much find the sweet spot between as tight as you can, but with things working, okay? Chuck and Daryl, would you like to emphasize on this? And
how when I talked about it earlier, when I said we go on site and we review the technical portion, if they're set up per this requirements using the STIG, anything that does not meet that requirement, as the doctor was just saying, if you practice at your home network and you STIG Windows 10 and then nothing works, and you had to go in and determine which setting that you set up or you change that is preventing you from doing the particular task that you want to do. At the systems that we audit, when they do that and they change it from the required setting, that's when they then have to do the documentation to ensure it's a just for a reason why they have changed that configuration, and this is why we did it, and this is when we did it. So at the same age, you can be practicing at your house. Okay, I changed this. I need to use the USB drive thumb drives because why? Because I'm stinking it for my kids when they want to print their schoolwork. Okay, this is the reason why. This is the setting I had to change. And what did I do to make sure nobody gets on my computer? Well, I made my password harder on my personal PC. And I don't let my kids near my computer, especially my son, because he's using the computers. So he can't do anything I don't want him to do. So there's what I changed. There's the reason why. There's the mitigation steps I put in place to protect my computer. It's a small sample of what we do on site.
A good example that we ran into, I've seen before, just to articulate, is DISA, for example, will say that you can't have any cache logons, no cache logons, which means that you have to be physically connected and you have to authenticate to a domain controller every time you log on. Well, there are instances where you may have employees who can't be physically connected, Two, they can't have their asset physically connected all the time, but they still need to log on to that asset. So you would deviate from that requirement and then document your deviation and document in such a way that, you know, we are allowing X number of cache logons due to this operational requirement. And then you would put that in your documentation. And then that would become an accepted risk as part of your accreditation package.
So this brings a very good point, Daryl and Chuck. Thank you for that. You need to understand, everybody needs to understand something. CISSP is a very theoretical exam. It's not hands-on. You will not be asked, how do you do this in Windows or Linux or this firewall or anything like that? That's the theory. That will get you the job. Now, to do cybersecurity job, you need to potentially need to go and use Wireshark. You need to be able to use Nessus. You need to be able to go and STIG machines or create policies. So what Daryl and Chuck are talking to you about right now is one thing is passing the exam, which is great. It will get you the job, but then know how to look at the settings on your own machines. I'm going to DISA to check the preferred settings on Windows 10. It will tell you exactly what you need to do. Play with it, see what can be locked, what doesn't have to be locked. It's something that every one of you could do. Again, make sure that you have backups in case you lock yourselves out, because it will happen at first and it's normal. Okay, just know it's normal at some point. You may have to reimage your disk because you lock yourself too much. Okay, but once you are able to do this, you know, there's a young person that works with me, very, very capable. He knows how to do all of these things really good, and he makes them very, very valuable. Okay, so please play with the STIGs. Try to, you know, change your GPOs, change, you know, all of your settings. Try to block, for example, USBs from working on your machines. See if you can do it. Of course, afterwards, enable it if you need it, but play with it to know to know your system. What do you think about this advice, Daryl and Chuck? Oh,
absolutely. Chuck? I would suggest to you that being a manager is, you know, you have to understand the theory. You have to be able to articulate it in a way that makes sense to the organization. But to do that, you have to understand the technology. Nothing is more frustrating to your technical staff than policy that can't be implemented technically. If you come up with a policy that says that you want to do X, Y, and Z, but there's just no way to implement that technically, it's very, very frustrating.
Chuck?
Sorry, my son came and asked me a question and I missed part of that. Sorry. When you were talking about, I apologize, but I got distracted for a second.
I got distracted too. I'm sorry.
The question was, what do you think about about experiencing the technical aspects and how does that relate to the management piece of CISSP?
Thank you. Oh, how's that? Well, I'll say for our job, besides actually having to have the ability to evaluate, okay, I've got Windows 10 SIG, I've got PowerPoint 2016 SIG, and I'm gonna go through and verify the system and set up correctly. When I get done with that IVNV at the end of the 2 week visit, I'm going to do an outbrief, and I have to explain all the findings that we have, or generally, the high number of findings, the high or very high findings we've identified, and have the ability to explain to the leadership of the site that we're auditing what we found, why it's important, and what they are suggesting what they should do to correct the issue. Having the foundational knowledge, because that's what CISSP is. It's let's say master of none, or I forget how it's like your knowledge is 1 inch deep but 300 miles wide because you have to know a little about everything. When you pass the CISSP and you have that foundational knowledge, so when you go have to explain to a full board colonel somewhere who's really not happy that his system, that his guys, his men and women have assured him is perfect, and I now have 350 Cat 1 findings. His blood pressure is going up. You need to have the ability to explain both the technical portion, this is what's set up wrong, and how and ways that they can fix that issue and make him, he or she, understand that it's not actually the end of the world. So it all ties together. The technical portion is very important. Understand the documentation and the policies and procedures underneath that set that requirement, and how to explain it to somebody when they're not really all that happy that you're talking to them and you tore up their system.
Cool. Do we have any questions so far? Anyone have any questions? So while we wait for questions, what advice, Chuck, would you give to students who would be interesting to working potentially for the DoD doing cybersecurity, or not even working for DoD, just doing cybersecurity? What advice would you give students?
Well, here's the thing. Some of the universities, for everybody that's in the cybersecurity field, we all came about it from a different path. Daryl had his path. I had my path. You had your path. Your path started from another continent. We all came into it a different point. But I go back to that foundational knowledge. If you're just getting into your first computer job, oftentimes, if you get a position at the help desk for a system, that's where a lot of people start out, because you're going to have to learn about how to help and repair all the systems inside that organization. Once you can understand that, because all that stuff builds on. Okay, maybe you don't want to do help desk for a year or two, but you're going to learn so much patching, you know, all that stuff is tied in. So then when you patch the Security Plus and you go actually get a job in the IA field, and then you're sent somewhere to perform an evaluation, you understand the equipment that you're looking at least generally enough that you can accomplish what you need to accomplish. So getting a Security, say you get a Security Plus and somebody goes hires you right off the bat and you have no any job history in the computer field, you may be great. You may be outstanding. You might learn really quick and you're leading the way. Or if you haven't spent any of the time learning some of those, I don't know if you're called lower level tasks or whatever, the direct straight technical stuff, if you haven't done any of that stuff beforehand, it could make the hill a little harder to climb. But like me, I've never been a sysadmin. That's not my background. I came back, like I said, I started doing long haul communications in the military and then transitioned over. So many people you run into, they may have started out, they were a system administrator and they realized, you know what, the security guys are making more money than I am. So I want to pursue that. So that's where they came from. So my intent or what I'm trying to say is, if you want to make a long-term career out of this, I suggest in one of those lower level positions to learn all about computers if you don't have that strong background, because not everybody does. I hope that helped or made sense.
Daryl?
I would say you need to seek out other people outside your circle. You need to find groups and organizations, and this, you know, college is a great place because you are introduced to people that you're not normally associated with. Individuals with different experiences and backgrounds that you normally wouldn't be exposed to. I'll tell you, one of the biggest things that I've learned since retiring from the military is that the military puts you in this little bubble, and you're surrounded by people who think like you, act like you, and do like you. And since then, I've realized that people like Dr. Bricard, who come from a different continent, who have a tremendously different background and experience, or Chuck, who comes from the Army, who in the Army thinks differently than the Marine Corps. They approach tasks differently. They plan differently. there's many different examples of people that I've been exposed to that I've been like, wow, I would have never have thought to go to that person to seek advice from. But because I was forced to sit down with them, I was exposed to their experience and I've learned from that. So find organizations, find clubs, for lack of a better term. There's 2600. There's CISSP study groups. There's Hackers Quarterly. There's a tremendous number of one of them out there. There's volunteer groups. You can work with kids and help kids in high school, and which will expose you to different things, to internship programs. But expose yourself to people from as diverse a background and experience as you possibly can, because that will provide you with a greater exposure to opportunity and that you can learn from. All too often, we stick ourselves in this bubble of self-confirmation bias that feeds into whatever we're used to and we're accustomed to. And that's comforting, but it doesn't always give us an opportunity to grow from.
Thank you, Daryl and Chuck. There's a question from Vinny that says, have you seen other people from other trade backgrounds get into security? So let me just mention, you may remember Gerald Bouchard, who was the CISO of LogMeIn, speak a few weeks ago. This gentleman has a bachelor in physics and a master's in physics. So he was absolutely not in security. He just transitioned into security. Mm-hmm. Plenty of people have, people were in the military. You can be, the degree doesn't really matter. Pass your security plus, or your CSSP, ideally both, have ideally a degree. It does help, especially the degree will help with your pay rate. It's not going to help you to get into DoD, but it will help you with how much you make. And you can get into security. Gentlemen, Chuck, would you concur?
Yeah, actually, this lady that works for KBR over in the validator side, she was the musical director for the University of Miami up wow. until about 8 years ago. And they got rid of her full-on position. She went and tried something else, and she transitioned. And now she's working cybersecurity. She was a musical major. So, yeah, like I said, when you talked about it, we all didn't come up with the same background. All different areas or avenues is how we ended up here.
And let me mention another example, if I may. The wife of a friend had been a stay-at-home mom for 20 years until all of her kids left home. And when she was promoted by her staff, she started asking, what shall I do? And we told her, well, as a challenge, get your security plus. She got a security plus. Then she got a CCNA. We told her to get a CCNA. That was 2 years ago when it was, you could go straight into CCNA. She got a CCNA. After CCNA, she got a Microsoft certified engineer position. And then she was offered, $100,000 to work for the Army. And she had no experience. All she did was for 6 months, she played with computers. And, at first, her skills were non-existent. And she just asked a lot of questions. The key is don't be afraid to not know and ask. No one knows everything in IT. And those that say they know everything, they're either, one in a million, or they're just liars. You don't know it all. It's impossible. So don't be afraid to ask.
Those people who say that are dangerous.
So there was one question. What makes you passionate about cybersecurity?
Besides the money. I like the challenge of it. I like, because I'm always having to learn something new and try to stay current, which is almost impossible with as fast as technology changes and new stuff is introduced. But I like the challenge of trying to stay proficient and preparing when I go somewhere to another location that's using different applications that I'm not familiar with. So I have to prepare myself before I get on site, so I look like I know what I'm doing. I don't want to have to learn while I'm on site in front of the customer. I'm going to learn before I go on site, so at least I look like I know what I'm doing.
Well, and whatever you know now, it's not going to be relevant really in 5 years, because that technology is going to change dramatically.
Yeah, this is something that other guests have mentioned before. Technology changes all the time. So just be aware that if you get into this field, you're going to need to recycle yourself all the time and, you know, learn something new. Just getting CISSP, this is just the beginning. It's not the end. Okay. Chuck, would you like to say something about that?
I mean, you have to stay, one, you're motivated to try to stay current and learn new stuff, simply because of the CPEs, which I'm still working on. So you can get your continuing professional education because you're required to get 60 a year for CISSP.
40.
But
40
a year. Yeah, it's 120. You're right, sorry. Yeah, you're right.
And for everybody,
120 for 3 years.
For everybody, this is one CPE today. If you need CPEs for Security Plus, CISSP, I will confirm to whoever that it's one CPE if you attended.
But anyways, my point is, I try to use that requirement as motivation to learn new information. If I have to do it anyway, whether I actually do a good training course that burns out a bunch of them, but if I have to read a bunch of articles, I try to do it on something that interests me or might come in, you know, come in handy down the road. So
the only thing I would say is the people that have led me into this job and shown me, the people that inspire me, Kyle Moschetto from a month ago was one of them. Those people are constantly learning. They constantly have a book in their hand. They're constantly going after something. I don't care if it's a YouTube video or if it's it doesn't matter. They're constantly learning an hour a day. And I would suggest this. If you don't want to do that, you're probably not pursuing a career that you really want to do. If whatever it is you want to do, if you don't look forward to putting in 60 minutes a day of learning something about it, it's probably not the career you want to do for the rest of your life.
That's exactly what I was going to say right before you spoke, Daryl, is that this whole field in IT, cyber in particular as well, it's just constant learning. And if you're not up for constant learning, then it's probably not the right place. You know, well, I don't feel like I just want to get my degree and be finished. It's like, no, you're never going to be finished. Not in this industry. So
absolutely. It's like we used to use helo pilots to go to the mountaintops to work on transmission links. And I used to like working on the pilots because there was never a pilot who walked up to a helo and went, man, I got to fly a helicopter today. This sucks. They enjoy their job. So if you don't enjoy doing your job, I mean, find something else. I mean, might as well. Life is way too short if you don't like doing what you're doing.
So true. So true. Well, I think this has been really awesome. Are there final thoughts from anyone? We have 1 minute or two here, but I have it recorded if anybody wants to review anything they missed.
Well, I just want to say I appreciate the opportunity. I really do. I mean, to be invited to speak in front of a group that had General Petraeus, General Yi, and again, Kyle Moschetto. I mean, that's amazing.
You're among like friends, no doubt. And all the recordings are together so people can listen to all of you. That's awesome.
Thank you very much, Daryl. Thank you very much, Chuck. Would you like to say one word, Chuck?
I enjoyed this. Just enjoy, like, just emphasize what Daryl was saying. Only do this if you are actually going to enjoy to do it, because there's going to be a lot of late nights and some of the stuff can get tedious. If you don't enjoy what you're doing, it's not going to be long-term sustainable. So anyway, awesome. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys, for your time. Really, really appreciate it, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks to the students, too, and faculty. Have a great night, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Veterans Day. Thank you.
Happy Marine Corps Birthday and Veterans Day. Hoorah.
That's true. Tomorrow. Bye, guys.
All right.